Okay, guys, in this lesson, we're talking IFR mind games, when good pilots do bad things, so how your mind can play tricks on you, and how to make sure you have good aeronautical decision-making abilities. I know you're all excited about being an instrument-rated pilot, and you're like, hey, talk to me about the instrument approaches and the ILS and the RNAV and all that good GPS stuff, and I want to see how to fly a SID and a STAR and all those cool acronyms. Well, we're talking about the really important stuff first, like aeronautical decision-making, like making good decisions so that you don't have to use all those crazy pilot skills that you can actually stay safe in the airplane. We're going to kick off this lesson by looking at a Cirrus SR-22 accident case study. Unfortunately, three people died in this one. So, before departing on the instrument flight rules cross-country flight, the private pilot obtained a weather briefing that forecast moderate icing conditions along the intended route. He decided to go anyways. The pilot, who was a commercial-rated passenger, so he actually held a commercial pilot certificate, and he was the passenger in the airplane, and then a second passenger then departed on that flight in the high-performance single-engine airplane, the SR-22. That SR-22 was not certified for flight into known icing conditions. Both the pilot and pilot-rated passenger were heard communicating with air traffic controllers during the flight, and it couldn't really be determined who was flying the airplane at the time of the accident. About an hour and 45 minutes into the flight, the pilot requested a higher altitude and stated to a controller that the airplane was picking up a little ice. The pilot was granted a higher altitude, which was above the clouds, thus reducing the potential for icing. About 20 minutes later, the flight began its descent towards the destination airport. Around 3,600 feet MSL, the airplane entered a steep, uncontrolled descent to the ground and basically disintegrated. Due to the night conditions, it's possible that the pilots were not able to visually observe the amount of ice on the airframe or did not realize how quickly the ice was accumulating. The airplane was equipped with a parachute system, CAPS, that most Cirruses have, or all Cirruses really have, and that CAPS system could be deployed by the pilot in flight. If you're within the parameters, usually under 130 knots or so, you can deploy that rocket motor with the parachute, and you should safely return to the ground, probably totaling the airplane, but get down safely, even if the airplane does have ice on it. The CAPS rocket motor was found expended, however, the parachute remained in its pack when the NTSB showed up to do their investigation. The NTSB did determine that the probable cause of this accident was the airplane's encounter with SLD supercooled large droplet icing, so that really nasty kind of icing that just forms on the airplane super fast. Basically, it's liquid water that is below freezing, and as soon as it touches something, it instantly freezes and builds up super rapidly. That's SLD, supercooled large droplet icing. That SLD icing resulted in a loss of lift and a subsequent uncontrolled descent into terrain. Also casual to this accident was the pilot's pre-flight and in-flight decision to fly in known icing conditions in an airplane that was not certified to do so. The pilot had over 1,000 hours total flight time, and the pilot-rated passenger had over 5,000 hours total flight time. Unfortunately, they all still ended up as a statistic. So, as we're moving on in our simulated cross-country here through this course, we want to talk about our next stop and talk about some weather and some decision-making in regards to that weather that we might have to think about if we want to really continue pushing on here. So let's imagine now that we're on descent into KVPS in the Florida Panhandle. And if you haven't noticed it by now, looking at the airport diagram, you'll see some strange arrows you may not have ever seen before on airport diagrams. These arrows represent arresting gear for aircraft with tail hooks because the Navy trains there. These very sturdy cables, really heavy-duty steel cables, are suspended just a few inches above the runway, and while your Cessna might be able to taxi over them, I'd highly recommend avoiding them and taking off either before you reach the cables or taxiing over them at a very low speed and departing after you cross them, or trying to take a taxiway route to the runway where you won't have to actually cross these cables at all. Landing and hitting these things at landing speed can be pretty disastrous for your little Cessna tires. If you have any questions about whether or not the cables are up or they're deployed that day, because they do put them up and down, sometimes remove them from the runway, then you can simply just query the tower controller when you're on downwind, or perhaps when you're a few miles out, and ask, are the cables up, or where are the cables at, where can I land, or where can I taxi to, that I'll be able to avoid these cables when you see these arrows on an airport diagram. Now, luckily for us, we've flown so far all the way from Venice to KVPS with VMC, visual meteorological conditions, prevailing all along that route. Unfortunately, storms have now moved in, though, and by the time the airplane is fueled and ready to go, the weather is going to be down to 150-foot overcast with 2 statute miles visibility, something you could theoretically do in your Cessna that's IFR equipped, and you do have your CFII on board. But I really want you to see, after going through these next topics here, if you feel it's a good idea to go flying and continue pressing on with the cross country, or perhaps head to the hotel, call it a night, and wait for the weather to improve.